Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Hey, this is Lexi, and here we go.
I have missed a total frog, full of bat tongue dog. Other spork and blind things to stay in my life. When I get strong,
double!
Hit the switch, let the all bubble.
And yes, here we are. Welcome to Cauldron of Knowledge, and I am your hostess, Lexi Doyle. Having an interesting time of things tonight. But anyway, we have a special guest with us once again. One of our favorite guests, Star Wolf, a.k.a. Sean Kane. Hey, how you doing?
Okay. A little bit off today, but otherwise I am functioning.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, it's the bug that's going around.
Right. Yep, I completely understand I've dealt with some similar lately. Mm-hmm. And so, and then, of course, I've had, you know, situations going on, which as I was referring to as the Chinese curse come to life. May you live in interesting times. So, and we have you here to talk what about today?
Runes again.
Runes, yes.
Yeah, I believe I talked about that like over a year ago, so the wheel comes round once more.
Right.
Okay, let me start with what runes are. First and foremost, runes are an alphabet. They are the indigenous alphabet of Northwestern Europe, with the exception of Ireland, where the alphabet was Oum. But they were used by the Norse, the Saxons, the Germans at various periods in their history, until it was later replaced by the Roman alphabet.
Sorry, before we get much further, if you don't hear me in response or something, it's because I had to run to the door.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll just keep talking then.
I'll be sure that you know when I'm back.
Okay. That is their... I said, so what can you do with them? Well, the first and foremost things, you can write things that looks like secret codes, because you can take something and you can write it in runic, because there are correspondences between the runic letters and the Roman letters that we use today. What is it also? It is also what is called a magical alphabet. So like Theban or Angelic or Crossing the River, it is an alphabet with a magical origin. Shortly after Odin and his brothers created the world, Odin hung himself... Oh, Odin, by the way, being the king of the Norse gods, for those of you who don't know. Father of Thor, for those of you who've been to the movies, and yes, sometimes he does indeed look like Anthony Hopkins. So, hung himself from the world tree, which is the axis around which the nine worlds all revolve, that is Yggdrasil, for 9 days and nine nights. He was pierced with his holy weapon, Gungnir, the spear of heaven. He received neither food nor drink, and as he fell back to earth after the 9 days, he grasped with him the runes, the symbols, and brought them to mankind. Now, there are supposedly other runes, runes that are used by the gods and runes that are used by the giants. But I am talking specifically the ones that we have, those of us who is men. Okay. That is the what they are. That is the mythical origins. And if you want the anthropological origins, I would suggest you look up a book called The Sacred Thunderbolt by Dr. Jane Sibley, which deals deeply in the anthropological linguistic origins of the runes as traders' marks brought up into the north from the Mediterranean countries.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Jane's got some interesting stuff. You ought to get her on sometime.
Hmm. Sounds like an idea.
Yeah. Okay. What can you do with them? Well, as I said, you can write with them because they do correspond to the Roman letters. For example, the first letter in the runic alphabet, Thehu, corresponds to F. The second one, Uras, corresponds to U, or sometimes U R, and so on and so forth. Let me give you titles of a couple of books that would be good ones for beginning runologists. Diana Paxson's Taking Up the Runes is an excellent basic book. Not only does it cover the linguistics, but it also gives meditations upon the various runes. If you're interested in a more magical bent, you can try, Freya Aswin's Leaves of Yggdrasil, also sometimes known as Magic in the Northern Tradition, depending on what edition you get. And Edred Thorson's Firthark. Now, Thorson's written the most on Northern runes and rune magic, so I'm probably be referencing him multiple times. But if you can just get one book, any one of those three would do it. Okay. What next? Do we have any questions? I guess not. Or either that or Alexei's had to run to the door. Okay. As I said, what can you do with runes? Well, first and foremost, they can be used, if you've got a copy of Thorson's Firthark, they can be used in almost a system of yoga. Thorson has taken the Armanen rune system that was created by Guido von Liszt back at the turn of the 20th century and expanded it into a set of what he refers to as, in the book, runic yoga. Runic yoga is basically a series of postures that imitate the runes, allowing you to become one with them. Those are called standa. There are also galdra, which are sounds that can be chanted in addition to just saying the names of the runes, that can be used for both magic and, as it were, to put yourself into the runic mindset. I suppose if you wanted to, you could make it a year-long exercise doing the galdra and the standa for each rune for 2 weeks and going on to the next. That would take you roughly the cycle of a year. Well, at least take 48 weeks because he does it for the Elder Firthark. There are three versions, the oldest being the Elder Firthark, which is 24 runes divided into three sets. The next one is the Anglo-Saxon, or sometimes known as the Anglo-Frisian Firthark, which expands it because there are sounds in the Anglo-Saxon dialects that weren't in the earlier German dialects. So there are certain of the runes, their names sound like they are loans from contact with the Welsh, a little bit further to the west of where the Saxons occupied in England. And the final one is the Younger Firthark, which was never really used for writing. That was almost a specifically magical alphabet. It's It came along later. Was among things lacked some of the vowel sounds that the earlier Firthaks have, and it's been estimated that was used almost entirely for magic, because you would have to know where to put in the vowels, and the only way to know where to put in the vowels would be to have been trained in the magical tradition. Okay. Let's see. Let's try a simple rune spell, shall we? Say you were looking to create a... Well, actually, before we get to rune magic, let me explain other things runes were used for. Most specifically, our knowledge of runes comes from what are called rune stones, which are found throughout Norway, Sweden, Denmark, some in Germany, and one or two possible rune stones here in the United States. There's some question about whether, for example, the Kensington rune stone here in the U.S. is actually a rune stone, or whether it was carved by a 19th century Swedish farmer. But that's for the archaeologists to decide, not the runologists.
Right. Wasn't there something... Where Kensington, where was that?
I think that's Wisconsin. I may be wrong.
I know that there was supposedly a find of Norse origin up in New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's considerably more possible, because that's at least within a day and a half or 2 days sail of the Viking settlements in Newfoundland. You know,
right.
That at least puts it within their radius. This is far enough into the Midwest they would have had to go all the way through the St. Lawrence up and over into the Great Lakes, and while possible, comes under the heading of not probable.
Right.
Okay. That covers the historical archaeological origin bits on the runes. Now, rune magic. Rune magic can be, like so many things, it can be verbal. You can string several runes together and chant the names repeatedly. But rune magic is best done inscribed. Runes are designed to be cut and carved, specifically carved. They are all straight angles. There are no curves in runes because they were designed to be cut with a knife into wood or carved with a chisel into stone. So, how do you go about rune magic? Well, you can write it. You know, use a piece of paper and a pen. You can also carve it into wood or carve it into stone, or I've had a certain amount of success engraving it into Fimo clay and then baking the Fimo clay. Wonderful stuff. But if you're going to set out rune magic, in the Havamal, which is the wisdom of Odin writ down, it questions anybody who is going to take on the art of runes. Do you know how to wrist them? Do you know how to carve them? Do you know how to blood them? Because it comes in, wristing is basically coming up with the whatever rune or bind rune. A bind rune is two runes combined to create a symbol which symbolizes the magical intent. Carving is obvious. Blooding involves basically reddening the runes. You can obviously use blood, in which case I'd suggest you use a sterilized needle, or if you can get your hands on it, a diabetic testing lancet to squeeze a little bit of blood out. Use your own blood. Somebody else's does not count. We're talking Norse magic here, not Aztec. Or you can use... Well, I carry a red Sharpie for what I refer to as quick and dirty rune magic.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you know, I've consecrated the Sharpie pen. It rides in my pocket, so if I need to do something quick, I can write it out fast. Sharpies have the advantage that they are permanent on most surfaces and semi-permanent on people. They'll last at least a few baths before having to be renewed. The other possibility is, of course, acrylic paint, which can be worked into the surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
If you're carving them in, you can use a knife, obviously. I find a lot of times when I'm working with wood, for example, I'll use a wood-burning pen to burn the symbols into the wood and then read them afterwards. My staff, Schmitter, is an example of that, where I've worked the entire Firth Arc plus the Anglo-Saxon extension into the front part and a few other symbols around from a runic magical system called Runevalder, which is a system of runic energy work. And I have to get up and give you your Runevalder attunement one of these days.
Yes.
Let's see. What next? Some basic rune magic. First thing you could use it for is warding your house. I believe we covered warding and protection at one point. So, what could you use? Well, the most obvious one would be to use, as I flip through one of my reference books, try and find it here. There we go. Would be the rune, oddly enough, Elhas, also known as Algis.
Okay.
It looks basically like a peace symbol without a circle surrounding it. It's also known as Elk. It's linguistically kind of has the Z sound. And it is used, it can be used for warding the boundaries of your land. So create four small wooden or stone runic talismans. Basically, wrist them, cut them, blood them, and place them at the cardinal points of your territory. The advantage of stone over wood is you don't have to renew them periodically as the wood decays. Let's see. That's a simple one. That uses one rune, okay? Now, for example, if you were creating a healing talisman, you could use, Lagus, water, and Berkano, which, among other things, symbolizes change and transformation combined. So Lagus is the L rune, Berkano being B. The Berkano actually looks like an angular letter B. The Lagus is an upright staff with a single angled arm coming down from one side. You could combine the two of them into a bind rune. And indeed, if you combine it right, you would also incorporate the tier rune, which is honor and justice, which if you're trying to heal somebody, that's always a good thing. And as you are cutting them, you chant the runes, and as definitely as you are reading them. We got any questions out there?
Not so far.
Okay. Now, here's where having not just the Anglo-Saxon or the Elder Firth Arc, but having the Anglo-Saxon Firth Arc is useful, because something I've been told by several other runologists, rune masters, is one of the Anglo-Saxon runes, specifically Yir or Yitz, which looks vaguely like Uras with an extra arm in it, is very useful for dealing with people who have problems focusing. So say if you have a child with ADHD or ADD, making them a garment with that rune, say, embroidered in it or somehow marked in it would help them focus better. It's sometimes known as the rune of the archer. Indeed, in Old English, it symbolizes the yew tree, and the yew tree is used almost besides for making sandals. Yew was used very heavily in making bows because it's both strong and flexible. That's another example of a single-use rune that these days would be tremendously useful given the plague of ADHD in the United States. Should just start making the things and turning them out. It's also known sometimes as the rune of the craftsman. It's good for any time you have to concentrate on something. It can also be used to bring luck in hunting. Another one, single use. You got somebody suffering from depression? The P-shaped rune Wunjo. Yes, the P-shaped rune whose sound is W looks like the letter P. Remember, this is not English. This is a much older language. That means joy. Properly charged, that one can be used as an antidepressant. Let's see. What else? Cracking open my Thorson, I'm looking to see. Okay. Here they have one. A bind rune for luck in battle, which was found actually carved on the blade of a spear discovered in Kraghull in Sweden. It combines the Fehu rune, which is property, and the Gipt rune, which is an X-shaped rune. The X-shaped rune, by the way, its sound is G, and its basic meaning is gift. Fehu, sound F, looks vaguely like an angular letter F, means property, specifically mobile property. Back in those days, that meant cattle, sheep, a ship. As opposed to the final rune in the Elder Firth Arc, Ofala, which symbolizes ancestral lands or the ancestral place. Okay. Where to go next? Well, as I said, runes are useful. They're intensely flexible. Let's see. By the way, runes do not have to be all angled or oriented upwards. There is, for example, in runic divination, unless you specifically want to, there is no reverse position like there is in say, tarot. Indeed, that's the next section I'm getting to. Runes can also be used, besides for magic, they can be used for divination. There's lots of sets of casting runes available. Most metaphysical stores have two or three different versions. The best system is, of course, to make your own. You can make them out of, wood. You can make them out of themo clay and bake them. You can make them out of ceramic and bake them. You can, if you're really crazy like I am, you could carve yours out of bone, which my original set is made out of.
Well, I can definitely attest to the fact that you are crazy.
Yes. Yes. At that point, you would red them. I'd start with a base of acrylic paint and then add whatever other materials you feel are necessary. Some of your own blood, dragon's blood, whatever metaphysical essences you want to into the paint, and work them into the lines that you've carved into your material. If you're using Fimo, put the stuff in after you've baked it. Likewise with if you're making them out of ceramic. I know that sounds like common sense, but it's amazing how uncommon common sense is. At that point, you can either make a set of 24, the Elder Firtharch, or if you want to, you can get really crazy and make a set encompassing the Anglo-Saxon Firtharch, would give you a full 32 rune set. And, okay, now that you've got them, what do you do with them? Well, a simple answer could probably be divined by thinking of your question, reaching into your rune bag, pulling out a rune, and seeing what it says. Simple. Disadvantage is sometimes that can get very esoteric. The runes come from Odin. Sometimes Odin can get very obscure when he wants to. It is unfortunate, but that's the way he goes. I've seen dozens of different rune layouts. The one I use most often involves drawing three runes, one for the past, one for the present, one for the future. I've seen other sets where you do three draws of three each. Once again, past, present, future. I've seen as many as 12, in which case it's laid out almost in an astrological formation. It depends on what you're looking for. And you can also get a simple yes-no answer working on the idea that some of the runes have negative connotations. For example, the H rune Hagalv basically is, its basic meaning is the hail which destroys crops. Or Thoras, which is both the hammer that Thor uses to destroy the giants, but it can also mean the thorn that pierces the traveler's foot. So, runes are not all sweetness and light. And I might point out, unlike Wiccan magic, there is no rule of three in rune magic. It's pretty much between you and the gods what you're going to do. There is no built-in what you reap comes back to you three times. Rune magic was and is played rather rough.
Right. Now, I have to ask this. Now, you're referring to the runes, and if you look them up online, you can look them up as Viking runes or Elder Futhark or Futhark, Futhark.
Yep.
Now, they only have one tense. There's only capital and not capital and lowercase.
Exactly. There are no lowercase runes.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, there are no lowercase runes. There aren't really any. If you're going to write in runic, there are no commas, there are no apostrophes, there are no periods.
But there is a divisor between words, though.
Yeah, usually it's a gap.
A gap, or I've also seen it with a dot in between, or a little diamond shape.
Yeah, that'll work too. The problem is, in certain versions, the diamond shape can also be the rune ing.
True enough.
You know, which is the NG sound, and deals with one of the aspects of the god Freyr in his form as the earth god, consort of the goddess.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful when you're using the little diamond shape, because that could either mean the end of the word or it could mean N.
True.
I tend to use the more complicated ing, which looks like two X's sitting on top of each other.
Yeah, that's the one I use.
Yeah, but you know, in certain versions, it's just the diamond shape. Indeed, I'm looking at one right here. I think that's more common in the Anglo-Saxon Firtharch. Yeah, okay, right here. I just slipped past it. I've got one of Thorsten's books open. I grabbed it so I'd have a reference, and here we go. I saw it right there. Yes. Their version of Ingwaz, his version is just a straight up diamond shape. Da-da. So, and once again, this system evolved over thousands of years. So there were some changes.
Right.
Other pieces of equipment you probably want for rune casting: a cloth to cast them on. Traditionally, it's supposed to be white, but I've also seen red cloths being used as casting cloths. Yes?
Well, I'm just trying to take a deep breath. I was expecting somebody to come here, and I had to make sure the door was unlocked, and I had to run all the way down to do it.
Okay.
I was a goofball. Yay!
You rest. Give me a second as I trace Uras in the air and think about it and send it to you. Primeval strength, or the strength of the wild oxen. Let's hope that made it. Yeah. In the fourth arc, a lot of the runes are paired together. I'll give you an example being the first two. Fehu represents cattle, but it represents domestic cattle.
Okay.
Uras, which is the second one in the fourth arc, is the aurochs. Now, the aurochs was a wild cow that didn't become extinct until the late 17th century. The best way to describe it is a cow built like a Mack truck with the attitude of a biker on crack. It was considered an act of bravery to kill one with a spear because there was an even chance of which one of you was going to survive the encounter. They were huge. Think of the nearest analog would be the Cape Buffalo down in Africa, as far as modern cattle goes. I understand there is a project in Eastern Europe. They're trying to backbreed the aurochs out of, among other things, Highland cattle, longhorns, and the Cape Buffalo, though I don't understand why anybody would want to create a bovine dreadnought with the attitude of Mr. T. It's one of those examples of why? Because we can.
Uh-huh.
Breed me something more useful. Breed me back a dire wolf or something.
Bring back two, I want one.
Yeah. Hey, at that point we can breed them.
Hey, that'll work, yeah.
Yeah. You know, bring back something nice. Bring back dire wolves. Bring back saber-toothed tigers. Bring back things that are small enough that we can actually put them in a cage.
Although, I have to say, it might be cool to see a Tasmanian wolf.
Yeah. But
a wolf that carries babies in a pouch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But we are, we're moving off of...
Runic, yes or no?
We're moving off of topic.
Back to the aurochs.
Yes, back to the aurochs. Back to the... And they see, they're often paired. Let me keep flipping through my book. I've got another one would be, well, let's see. For example, Firthark, that involves the first six runes in the Fehu, Uras, Thoras, which is the
represents the TH.
Yes, the TH, and stands for giant, demon, Thor, thorn, giant, Thors. It's paired with Ansus, which is the rune that represents Odin. It is the ancestral sovereign god.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Odin or Votan, sometimes known as the mouth of the mouth of the god. In old English, it means the pagan god. Well, there's effectively that is the mouth of Odin opened at the end of the Anglo-Saxon fourth arc. There's the rune Gar, which is the mouth of Odin shut.
Okay.
So to me, it looks more like the patch that covers the eye that he bartered for wisdom.
Right.
But that's between me and grandfather and not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Of course, the most famous rune that everybody, or infamous rune, is, of course, the Seagull rune, which looks basically like a lightning bolt. So, and was unfortunately used by the military arm of a certain German political organization. But what it has nothing to do with lightning, actually. What that stands for, that's the rune of the sun. Its nearest counterpart would be the Roman deity Sol Invictus, the unconquerable sun, or the unstoppable sun. And I'm talking S-U-N, not S-O-N. And what it means, it's the ability of the sun to overcome darkness.
Uh-huh.
But it also means victory. Always a good thing to add to your rune magic if you need to.
Absolutely.
As I said, rune magic has actually survived. If you look especially at some of the half-timbered houses that you find in, especially in Norway, you'll see there are runes actually worked into the timbering. And you can see them there because suddenly you'll see pieces of wood moving through the plaster work that make no sense structurally. But there they are. They're put in. They're usually protective runes.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be found to a certain extent in Pennsylvania Deutsch hex signs.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, the hex masters of Pennsylvania and West Virginia still have a certain amount of rune work in their stuff. Shouldn't we be doing a halfway point at this somewhere soon?
Ah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be taking a station identification break, and then we will be back in 1 minute.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
And here we are back again.
Yes. Okay, another use for runes is if you need to put a spell on yourself, you can write it, or you can carve it into a stick, read it, then scrape it off with a knife, dissolve the scrapings in something, and drink it. This can also be used for putting the magic into somebody else, too. That's an old system. That goes back.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. That can also be used to deactivate a runic stave if you happen to come across one that's meant to hurt somebody. You can just basically scrape the runes off.
Right.
Now, other options, of course, are runes can be tattooed. You know, runes can be tattooed in. The berserks of Iron Age Norway often would tattoo runes on their bodies to bring strength and ferocity. Urus and Thoros being a good combination if you plan on being an unstoppable killing machine on an Iron Age battlefield.
Now, from what I understand of that, Thoros was put on the sword arm and Urus was put on the shield arm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You want the wounding ferocity on the bit that was going to be doing the damage, and you want the strength where you're going to be stopping the incoming blows. For that matter, you could use Rido, which is the R-shaped rune, which, oddly enough, actually means the phoneme R. That can be used, and that could be used to give speed or endurance on a journey. They found a couple of saddle trees with Rido carved into them.
Nice.
Yes. Let's see. So many things. Still no questions?
Actually, the one question we had that I already did ask that, and that was on the case of the runes.
Oh, yeah. There are no uppercase runes. Actually, there are no lowercase, basically.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else can be done with rune magic? Well, pretty much anything.
Okay, you did say something about but it would be an interesting variation to try doing lowercase. Would that affect the enchantment?
Okay, that one I'm not sure.
Yeah, that would kind of be try it and tell us.
Yeah. Experiment and get back. That sounds like an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the real question being obviously you would make the first or whatever you wanted uppercase, say, twice the size of the lower one.
Right.
Which, if you're carving, that can be a technical problem. Of course, if you're carving using, say, the witch's friend, the Dremel tool.
Yes.
It could be done. It could be done.
Yeah. Yeah, at some point in time you have to get up here and see how my collection has grown.
Yeah. Let's see, what else could be done? Oh, practically anything. I mean, inscribing it upon your drinking vessels, if you are looking to say protect yourself from poison. That's an old one. Once again, that would be like legus, which would ensure that whatever went in would become as pure as primeval water. Ing, interestingly enough, is a good one if you're carving it upon a sacrificial tool or a magical tool that's going to be used for sacrifice, or if you're sacrificing something, put ing on it so that the universe will know that is a sacrifice.
Right. Now, here's an interesting, kind of interesting question, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the concept of bind runes and the writing thereof.
Yes.
Now, pretty much you're trying to basically combine them all in the most attractive way possible.
It doesn't have to be attractive. But, for example, I'm looking at some here in the book. They're attractive if that works for you, but the other possibility is using the idea of sigil magic. If you have more than one of the same letter, eliminate all but one and use it in that way. Also, you can put it together. So, for example, if you have a Fehu rune and Fehu rune and a Lagu's rune, you can put it together or so that they overlap each other, one becoming the other.
Right. And in some cases like that, wouldn't you actually find like other runes within it that you didn't necessarily add?
Exactly. You can combine Fehu and Lagu's to create Fehu, Lagu's, and Tyr. You can, if you need to, you can use Berkano with Rido to create, the two of them can overlap.
Right.
If you're using Gipt as a base, you can put all sorts of runes off the various X-shaped arms.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying one to get in contact with Odin, you can combine As and Othala together and effectively double the power of both of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the other things I had seen was it was an old carved bone comb.
Comb magic, yes. That's a good one for keeping one's own personal luck and personal magic. A lot of Norse and German beliefs involved that one's luck, one's personal power, was bound up in your hair. So keeping the hair well well maintained was important, and they would inscribe either their name or a, you know, runes of good fortune. So once again, my friend Fehu, Gipt, Wunjo on the comb, you know, to bring good fortune to the person who's using the comb.
Mm-hmm.
You could also simply inscribe, say, you prescribe Alexis's comb on it.
Mm-hmm. That would be interesting. I kind of like that idea, and I want to try it.
Well, I mean, unless you're really fond of the smell of burning plastic, I'd get a wooden comb and
actually, you can find wooden combs rather cheaply on eBay and Etsy, so.
Yeah, and I get them at Ren Fairs from people, so.
That's
simple enough. Yeah. I wouldn't use a horn comb, cause, even though it would be most traditional, because I don't like the smell of burning horn. It smells like burning hair.
Yeah, because there's still keratin in it.
Yep. So, the same if you decide to make your runes out of slices of antler. I've done that. It stinks when you burn the symbols in. Get used to the idea it's going to smell.
Right.
For that matter, it'll smell when you're cutting it up. Unless you're using a handsaw, if you have somebody cut it on a bandsaw, it is going to stink.
Yeah. I want to look for that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. You might want to make one for yourself and one for each of your daughters so they can brush their hair and restore their power.
That actually was going to be part of the conception of that.
And I'd also put yeast on the combs for your daughters just to help them focus.
Most definitely. Oh, Tibetan yak hair comb.
Ah, the comb of the great white snow yak.
I'm just happening to see them right here on eBay. And there's several, and you're looking at prices that are pretty impressive. Less than $10 on most of them.
Okay. Looking here, a bind rune for cultivating the of mental awakeness seems to use As, Wunjo, Fehu, Algis, and Manos combined into a long, rather attractive looking rune. Strong will, let's see, Wunjo, Issa, Legus, Yera, Othala, and Nalfus. Nalfus being the N-type rune, it represents basically the need, or the fire that's kindled to keep you warm in the winter, the fire that you need to kindle, as opposed to its opposite, Kanus, which is the primeval fire of Muspelheim. Please make sure if you're doing a fire-based spell, you're using the rune that's appropriate.
Uh-huh.
Several of these runes basically tap into the primeval forces of the universe. Specifically, if you're dealing with the rune Issa, that is the primeval ice of Muspelheim. If you're using the rune Kanaus, which is torch, while it can bring illumination, it's the illumination you get just after they set off the H-bomb. It is the primeval flame of Muspelheim, the flame that will eventually destroy the universe, which also helped create it.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And, you know, properly combined, I've got, especially if combined with the rune Urus, which is primeval strength, so Urus Kanaus, primeval strength of fire. Or one of my favorites, Urus Hagals, primeval disruption. Want to see something ripped apart on the subatomic level? Use that one, but be prepared for the sound of the snapping of interatomic bonds. And if you're using it against a person, be prepared for a lot of screaming. Yes, sometimes I refer to runes as hacking the base code of reality. Though that is not exclusively purview of runes. I find it easier than Enochian or Hebrew.
Right.
One advantage of Enochian is, thanks to the series Supernatural, people know about it.
Yeah, that's true enough. Matter of fact, I'm buying a T-shirt that says it's funnier in Enochian, and the word Enochian is written out in Enochian.
Yes. Gee, I know somebody else who either owns one or would really like one of those.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Certain mutual friend of ours.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah. Okay. We've got, about 10 more minutes?
Actually, a little less than that, because we have to clear switchboard
for the next
show.
Okay. Let's see. Other things you can do with runes. Well, obviously, you can use them for healing.
Mm-hmm.
Which point, yes, I would draw them directly on the person to be healed if they will let you. At that point, because, you know, you can either use some sort of consecrated paint, or, as I said before, the Sharpie pens work very well. They have the advantage that most people won't even notice you carrying one.
Very true.
Yeah, and they work pretty, as I said before, they work on pretty much every surface. You can also get paint pens that function along the same lines. Sharpie makes a few. Found out recently that Sharpie also makes a gold Sharpie pen.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I only found that out when I was looking for something to stock my rune kit.
They make Sharpies in gold and silver.
Yes, and copper.
Now, copper I did not know about.
Yeah. I had to buy a package to get a gold one.
Hmm.
And let's see. And those are used. Normally, runes are done in red because you're supposed to blood them, but if you're doing a spell for prosperity or a talisman for prosperity, doing them in gold, either gold acrylic paint or gold Sharpie, or for that matter, gold calligraphy marker, those are very useful.
Yeah, I definitely love the look of the calligraphy pens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm doing my own rune book in calligraphy. I'm part of a runic study group here in Connecticut. We meet once a month, use Paxton's book on runes, and do the meditations, and as we go, I am copying the runes into my book. So when we reach the end, I will have it, the 24 runes of the Elder Firtharch. I've already put the Anglo-Saxon ones in, because I don't use those for divination. I just use them for magic.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to have a nice little book. And the
nice part is,
I got myself one of those Day Runner type books, so I've actually got space for my pens.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's always very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what
so
else?
I've definitely been clicking on some combs here, so I'm going to try that out.
Yep.
I actually found bone combs with wood handles.
That would work very well.
Yeah.
I mean, in a pinch, a standard plastic dime store comb will work, but, you know, that if you're using a wood-burning pen to cut the runes, it's going to smell.
And actually, one of the interesting things I'm also learning is, for those of whom tend to fly away hair, a bone comb actually is anti-static.
Mm-hmm. So is a boar bristle brush.
Yes, I have one of those.
As do I. Indeed, it's got a wooden handle. I'm thinking I may carve my runes into that, seeing I use it every day.
Ooh.
Interesting concept.
Oh, and I just found something else. The decorative hair combs. So you know you've got me going on this, and I'm going to be going nuts.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You know I love it.
Actually, that's part of my job.
Oh, yeah. True enough.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've also seen some bracelets that were done like that were leather bracelets with the runes burned into them.
Yeah, usually for various purposes like strength or endurance or luck or protection.
Absolutely.
And indeed, those of you who are craft-minded witches could perhaps do a small sideline in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you trying to plant suggestions for me there?
Do I need to get a bigger brick?
No, you don't. No, that's fine. The thought has been accepted, as I am also dealing with. I'm going to be starting my own Etsy store, and I'm going to be making some booster stuff for my show,
mm-hmm.
so that I can help. It can help defray the cost of broadcasting, and I'm coming up with my own line of adoptable voodoo dolls.
Ooh.
Yeah. They'll come with their own little certificate that you can adopt them.
Sounds good.
And they'll have different personalities, different designs. The first four are almost complete, and they're actually made for three other people and myself that I know, that are my paranormal friends.
Okay.
Because we were all present when we were playing with voodoo dolls. Not playing like, you know, stick pins in, but using it as a baseball.
Yes.
Just for fun. It was one of those little cheap ones. They were actually purchased in a gumball machine at Walmart.
Oh, those.
Yeah. It was funny. They got mad at me when I grabbed it and was going to go into the bathroom and give it a swirly.
Yeah.
No, don't get it wet. So, once again, Starwolf, I have to thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, you know, even though we've had this talk over a year ago, there's still new bits we catch from it. So
I keep researching, and I keep coming up with new things.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that.
Thank you.
Once again.
And thank you.
Okay, thank you everyone for listening in, and we will be back again next week. Topic to be announced. As I am starting to really, my New Year's lifestyle changes, one of them is going to be to spend more time organizing and bringing some good quality shows and improving podcasts.
Sounds good.
So everyone, stay tuned, take care. Up next is Shriekfest Radio. Be well, and peace, love, and cheesecake.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye.